First, I want to give you greetings from Catherine, who is doing well. She arrived safely in St. Louis, and she's with kids-in-law, and is she's doing well. And she'll be back on Tuesday morning. So what I'm actually going to preach on this morning is from Galatians and not from the gospel reading, Galatians 6. So I'll be rereading parts of that on occasion through the sermon. And I want to start with a question, which is, why do you go to church? Now, I've met a lot of people over the years who don't go to church, and religious people, spiritual people, and I've always been curious why they didn't go. I can't count how many times that their answer is, I prefer to go into the woods or to the beach or to the mountains or something because I feel closer to God when I'm out in nature. And, you know, I can identify with that, and so could Jesus. I mean, he was always going off by himself someplace so that he could commune directly with God. Other people say, I don't go to church because I am so tired by the end of the week that I just need to sleep in. I've heard that a lot, especially in college. Others say, I don't go to church because I don't feel welcome there. That's the saddest one of all, I think. But you're here this morning, and so presumably you don't feel quite as strongly as those people do who don't go to church. But why? What positive reason do you have for coming? And why shouldn't those other people that I've mentioned, why shouldn't they come too? And that's really what I want to talk about. I used to go to church because I felt guilty. That's a terrible reason. So then I stopped going to church because I felt guilty. And it's just a lose-lose situation there. And I hope none of you feel like that. If you're here because you feel guilty, go home. Guilt has no part in what we're doing here. Now, I would say that those answers of the people I quoted reveal a basic misunderstanding of what the main purpose of going to church is. The main reason that we should come to church is not so that we can feel closer to God. Hopefully you do, but sometimes you won't. I think the main reasons for going to church are found in Galatians 6, which is why I wanted to talk about it. But in summary, I think the main reason for going to church is in verse 2. Bear one another's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. It's hard to bear another person's burdens if you're out in the woods or if you're sleeping in. Bear one another's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. In other places, Paul says, the whole law is fulfilled in this one word, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Bearing one another's burdens is to some extent interchangeable with loving our neighbors. So it's important to get that part right. That's the whole purpose of coming to church, is loving our neighbors. That's the whole purpose of staying home from church. That's the whole purpose of anything you do, any choice you make, is ultimately loving your neighbor. So, the right reason for coming to church is it gives us a better opportunity to bear one another's burdens, whatever they are. Now, it's a little bit tricky talking about bearing one another's burdens because in just a few verses, Paul says, for all must carry their own loads. Now, how are you going to bear one another's burdens if everybody ultimately has to bear their own? Okay, now that's one of the things I think that makes Bible study interesting, is all these little subtleties that go on. I love that kind of stuff. And fortunately, for me, you would probably find it boring, but I know just enough Greek that I can get into it and enjoy thinking about it. He's using two different Greek words in the two verses. And so when that happens, it is like an invitation to focus on the difference in meaning between those two words. I know it sounds like I'm becoming a teacher. You know, it's just one of my burdens to bear. But the first thing to do is to get our definition straight. So the Greek word for burden, and I won't burden you by telling you what the Greek word is. You don't need to know. But it means a wide variety of things. First of all, it just means a heavy weight, something you have to carry. You can tell something is a burden if it makes you tired. There are a lot of different kinds of burdens, though, besides weights. You don't have to carry a piano. Chronic bad health is a burden that people bear. It's a heavy burden. Raising children is certainly a burden. The weight of the responsibility for nurturing children, and then when they start thinking for themselves, the weight of the responsibility to not just pull your hair out and run screaming into the next room, that is a burden that many of you have had. Or if you have an invalid in your family, a child who is chronically sick, or a spouse, or if you suffer from depression, that is a really increasingly common and heavy burden to bear. Or bitterness from past offenses that you just can't let go. Or repeated disappointments. There's a proverb that says, hope deferred makes the heart sick. You're hoping for something, and it doesn't come. And it doesn't come, and it doesn't come. That is a real burden. Paul also, in Greek, this word is also used to mean authority. What we would say, the burden of an office, the burden of your authority. You can see that in elected officials a lot of times, the way the burden of their office settles on them. If you watch The Crown, the television series about Queen Elizabeth, I thought it portrayed really well how the burden of being Queen of England just settled on her as her father died, and she knew she couldn't escape. Her life would never be the same. Paul talks about the burden of being an apostle, of how God put on him the burden of caring for all the churches. We are exhorted in other parts of Scripture to be kind to our pastors so that their task in our midst won't be a burden to them. But some burdens are very far away from us. You've got to understand that you don't have to understand the burden in order to help bear it. There is a very heavy burden that goes with being born black in America. How many of you here are white? Quite a few of you. you have no idea, and I have little or no idea, what it's like to be a black person in America. It is a burden that they're born with and that they carry all their lives, and we can only dimly see it. Or being a refugee, seeking shelter, fleeing danger to look for a place of safety, say, the land of the free and the home of the brave, and being met by guys with guns who take your children and put you in a camp. That's a burden. It's a burden just to flee to begin with. And we have no idea what it's like to bear that burden. These are all burdens that are very far away from us. But make no mistake, some of those refugees are Christian brothers and sisters. And even if they're not, we still are called to bear their burden. But some of them are our brothers and sisters. And we have not borne their burdens like the Christian nation we claim to be. It's hard to figure out how we can help bear that burden. From a distance, knowing nothing about it, little or nothing about it. But as a minimum, I would suggest that we should live our lives and make our choices so as far as possible not to add any more burden to what they already bear. Now for me, and I'm getting on shaky ground here, but for me, what that means is that I am not going to vote for anyone who puts additional burdens on anyone, especially people who already have intolerable burdens. Now, whoever you vote for, any politician you vote for, is going to put burdens on somebody. That's the nature of a government. Governments put burdens on people of one kind or another. But for me, I am most concerned about burdens being placed on people who are least able to bear them. And I don't want to add anything to that. Nearer to home, though, there are other burdens that we can actually face in our daily lives occasionally. It is a burden, for example, to be an alcoholic. And it's something that most of us just can't understand. What it's like to wake up every day and have to start over again, knowing that you're going to have to struggle against those same desires that you woke up yesterday having to struggle against, and knowing that if you fail and start drinking again, everybody around you is going to suffer the effects of that. And it never goes away. Unfortunately, churches have taken the easy way out on this. They just call it a sin and condemn it and let them go their way and don't try to understand or help bear the burden. So instead of bearing that burden, they just heap on the extra burden of guilt and shame. Now, you don't have to understand a burden to bear it, though it helps. And it's because of the failure of churches to be willing to bear that burden that things like AA exists. The churches wouldn't do it. It's hard to know how to bear that kind of burden. But the least we can do is try to understand it and try to become the congregation, the kind of congregation, where an alcoholic could come in and feel accepted and feel at peace and feel like there was someone here who cared about the burden he's bearing. But we fail even worse. We fail even worse when it comes to gay Christians. It is, and I know a little bit about this from people that I know, it is a nearly intolerable burden when a person first realizes that they're gay. What are they going to do? Are they going to keep a secret and hide? Are they going to tell people and be persecuted for it? Because persecution still exists. You can see that in churches whose primary policy is just to denounce what they call sins and not try to understand, not try to bear the burden, not try to lighten the burden, but make the burden heavier. This is exactly what the Pharisees did in Jesus' day. He says, they tie up heavy burdens, hard to bear, and lay them on people's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to lift a single finger to help them. Let's not be Pharisees. Let's not be the kind of congregation that imposes burdens on people and won't lift a finger to help. In the Bible, that's called hardness of heart. It's a kind of quicksand that can swallow up a whole congregation of the unwary. Let's try to be the kind of congregation that tries to understand and that has a heart for bearing burdens, for helping. I want to reread a verse here. The first verse in chapter 6. And this is something that's not in the sermon. I'm just throwing it in at the moment. My friends, if anyone is detected in a transgression, you who have received the Spirit should restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness. That's a bad translation. I know enough Greek that I can read that and say, no, that isn't what it says. In fact, I just spent 5 years studying Galatians. That's not what it says. Jesus did not set up the church to be a spy network going out and looking. Is anyone we can detect in some transgression over here? Anywhere? Anybody? That's not what it's talking about. You are not a spy network. That's not your job. What it means is anyone who is caught in some kind of web, who is caught in some snare that is enslaving them, that's what the passage is talking about. And it says, you who are spiritual should restore them. Set them free. Help them get out of the snare they're trapped in. In a spirit of gentleness. And you look at so much that's going on in churches. It's very hard to find gentleness. But let's be that kind of people. And if there's no gentleness in a church, that means, according to this verse, that there's no one in the church who's spiritual. If anyone is spiritual, let him help with a spirit of gentleness. Gentleness is a diagnostic quality there. Okay, now think about it. Say I have to move a piano in, and you want to help bear my burden. Let's be as literal as we can get here. What you don't do is just push me aside and try to pick up the whole piano yourself. Now, I say that, but actually our son Wyatt did exactly that once. We were trying to move in a piano and we were stuck. We couldn't budge the thing. And so he came and, oh, he's strong. But ordinary people don't do that. You go to the other end of the piano and you try to help by other burden. You try to lighten the burden. Or better yet, call two or three of your burly friends and have them all come and all of you together bear the burden. You don't try to take over somebody else's burden. That's not what bearing one another's burden is. You can't do it for one thing. As Paul is about to say, everyone must bear their own load. You can't take over somebody else's burden. And even more important is to realize that you can't fix it. You cannot fix somebody else. That's not your job. Your job is to help their burden be lighter, not straighten it out. Don't give cheap advice from the sidelines over how they can get their lives together, because a burden, a real burden, is not something that can be fixed with just little cute lifestyle changes. Eat more fiber, start jogging, maybe take a yoga class. That all sounds like wisdom, as Paul says in Colossians, but it has no power. You can't even fix yourself, much less somebody else. The church, there is no gift of the Spirit called Mr. Fix-It. A burden worthy of the name is not going to be fixed that way. I have been on the receiving end of that kind of help, by the way. And it's not help. And my life is not fixed still. So let's not be like that. Let's don't do that. At root, the reason that we have burdens is because we have a future. The reason a burden is because it lasts, because it's going to be with us tomorrow. And it's going to be with us the next day, and it's going to be with us. If we didn't care about it, we could just drop it. If we had no responsibilities, if we didn't care about other people in the church or our families or whatever, we could just drop the burden. It's that we care about it that makes it the burden. If we could just face it and get it over with and tomorrow wake up without it, then it wouldn't be a burden. But it's the nature of a burden to just go on, and we usually can't see the end of it. And I think that's related to another place in Paul's letter, 2 Corinthians 4:17, where he uses the same word. And he says, for this light momentary affliction, and notice what he's talking about, our burdens, for this light momentary affliction, our day-to-day burdens that each of us are bearing, is preparing us for an eternal weight, an eternal burden of glory beyond all comparison. The weight of glory. The burdens that you're bearing right now are for glory. They sure don't seem that way. They don't seem light and momentary, as Paul says. They wear us out. And that's why we need each other. To strengthen each other. You know, it's a lot easier to help somebody else carry their burden than it is to carry your own. It's so much easier. Later on in this same chapter, Paul says, do not grow weary of doing good. Doing good is a burden. and it will wear you out as well. Don't give up, he says, because someday it will end. It won't really go on forever like it seems to. The weight we're carrying is the weight of eternity. The heaviness of our eternal destiny is actually what we're carrying right now. Our burdens matter because we are eternal beings. But it also makes them worth carrying. And that's why he goes on to say, everyone must bear his own load. Now there, he changes the Greek word. The word for load is a different word. Literally, what it meant was the cargo of a ship. It's a very simple word. It doesn't have lots and lots of different meanings. But it was used, and cargo of a ship, what is it talking about anyway? But it was used in a figurative way. It meant the unborn child that a pregnant woman is carrying. Her cargo, as it were. Now you can see what Paul is getting at. The whole thing of this bearing one another's burdens is like helping a pregnant person get through her pregnancy. There's a new creation growing inside you. All of you are spiritually pregnant. You are going to give birth to, become a new creature. C.S. Lewis said that if we could see ourselves after the resurrection, we would be strongly tempted to worship the ones that we saw. It is glory beyond the brightness of the stars. That's what Abraham was promised, right? He would have offspring like the stars of the sky. That is the nature of the burdens we are carrying. It is like going through pregnancy. But at the end, you see, there's the catch. Though the mother can have all these people helping her bear that burden, ultimately, she's got to suffer the labor by herself. Nobody can help with that. Nobody can be in that place. The church, and the reason we come to the church, is that this is the maternity ward of the Spirit. We are coming here to help each other become, give birth to, sons and daughters of God, fully. Jesus said, and it's kind of a motto that we're using for a church now, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And the word for burden there is cargo, load, the unborn child that you are carrying. Jesus is the midwife. He began a good work in you, and he will not leave it unfinished. It will be accomplished. And all the burdens that you're bearing right now in your life, they will all be forgotten because of the joy of the new creation. Amen.